Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Oh, shotgun. Stroud throws that ball tipped and intercepted. The Vikings force the turnover. Crugier Hill, the former Texan, comes away with it.
Sometimes you just know right away. That was the second play of the game, and things only got worse from there. As after Camus Crugier Hill, an ex-Houston Texan who was still in the National Football League, got that interception the second play of the game, things just got worse and worse and worse for your now 2-1 Houston Texans. Hello and welcome aboard Gallant and George. It is Monday, September 23rd. Joe is here. Sean is here. Joe, you watched this thing in Lake Charles at least.
Yeah, that was fun. Not a lot of good football happening on Sunday across the NFL.
No.
It was not an entertaining 12-3 window, I would say. The Texans leading the category of that game. Not fun, not good football, just a unenjoyable experience watching them get trounced by the Minnesota Vikings for 3 hours.
Ass-kicking. That is the worst loss of the DeMeco Ryans era. It's not like there's a lot to go off of. You got the Jets loss last year. You have the Panthers loss and the Falcons loss to a lesser extent. But there are expectations now attached to this team. And because there are expectations and we are raising them because of all the hype going into the year, something like that, how can you buy into this team as a Super Bowl contender today? And again, it's one game. I get it. But how can you buy into them as a Super Bowl contender? We've both watched the TV show Succession, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For those who don't know, it's a family of a media conglomerate, and they're all trying to figure out who's going to inherit the company. And Logan Roy, played by Brian Cox, the McDonald's voice guy, for those who don't know, has this to say to his children about them and their attempts to take control of the company away from him.
I love you, but you are not serious people.
That deep breath, that sigh. That's where I'm at right now. I do not take the Texans seriously right now. Could I by the end of the year? Sure. We're a sports talk radio show. We get very bipolar from time to time. But that was pathetic. Good teams don't lose like that.
They don't. And good teams also find a way to beat good defensive coordinators, which they don't do. Like we saw in the NFL last year, the Baltimore Ravens have a lot of success against the Bobby Slowick, Kyle Shanahan, Baltimore, and the Miami Dolphins teams. They dominated. Mm-hmm. In back-to-back weeks, Brian Flores has dominated the Kyle Shanahan and Bobby Slowick offense. But you don't lose games like this in that fashion because your defense wasn't special. And your offense, I mean, it wasn't even competitive. Like, that's why I think you're spot on with you don't lose like games like this if you're a real Super Bowl contender because you weren't even competitive.
Right. I know a lot of people today are praising the Vikings, and deservedly so. Kevin O'Connell is proving he's one of the best coaches in the league. They are winning with Sam Darnold under center, for God's sakes. And Brian Flores, as you said, has drawn up back-to-back game plans against top-of-the-line offenses in the NFL that are part of that Shanahan tree. So a lot of people are giving the Vikings their flowers today. But that's a team that is quarterbacked by Sam Darnold. That is a team that was without Jordan Addison. That is a team that was without TJ Hawkinson. Did it not look easy for them on offense? It's not just that Sam Darnold threw for 4 touchdown passes against you. It's also that Aaron Jones ran for 103 on 19 carries. The one strength of this defense was supposedly stopping running backs. We saw it week one against Jonathan Taylor. We saw it week two against DeAndre Swift. This game, the Vikings did whatever they wanted. And it's one of those ones where you look at DeMeco Ryans, he got outcoached. You look at Bobby Slowick, he got outcoached. You look at CJ Stroud, not his best performance. It's 1 week, sure, but it's one of those things where it feels like just an indictment of where they are. And for all those people that were really excited about them going into the year, this is why a lot of us had them predicted to win like 11, 10 even games, because they are going to go up against teams that are perhaps more serious operations than them. And when you're getting penalized after 12 times for 120 on national TV, should have been 13 because Azeez Al-Shaair got away with bow punching somebody in the face, you get 11 for 88.
I mean, the flag, the penalties is like, that's the one where it adds to the poor operation. Like, the amount of penalties you've had in 2 weeks is jarring. Mm-hmm. That is just fundamentals. It's your coaching. It's just your players being disciplined. And that was an issue that we saw at times last year, too. And that's why I think this game, like, going into the season, there's all this hype. Like, I had them at 10 wins. I have them going to the AFC Championship game. I still think they're going to get to that point. I still think that is in this team's future this season, that they can get there because of what we've seen in the NFL across the board. The Texans can turn this thing around. It's just one loss. But even though it's one game this year, I think you still have to look at CJ getting sacked 11 times in the first two games last year. The sacks adding up last year at the end of the season. The losses to the Jets. The losses to the Browns against quality defensive coaches. Losing games to the Carolina Panthers. And then all the penalties you had last season. Laremy Tunsil's entire career and this season. The bad things that were existed with the Texans last year that you thought they would improve on, it doesn't seem that they have. And things like discipline and not jumping off sides and having false start penalties is not something that should be impossible to fix, because all you have to do is not do it and stop making excuses for it. But like, it's the same problems that were there last year. And that's why I don't think it's just one game, because this is a continuation of problems from the past.
It is. Sean, do you have the dump button ready? Because I'm sorry. This man deserves a cussy cuss. Laremy Tunsil, for fuck's sake, dude. What are you doing?
Great question.
That's all I've got is a question, because this guy's supposedly, what, the best left tackle in the NFL? I'm too lazy to study the tape. Too lazy. I don't play that. I'm not studying the tape. I don't want to do that. But everyone says he's the best offensive lineman playing left tackle in the league. Okay, great, but how many false starts? 3 false starts, 2 illegal formations. He's been penalized 10 times this season, and I'm going to read this quote from a Houston Texans coach. Laremy, he's played very well, but he's had too many penalties. He would be the first to tell you that. I think nobody feels worse about that than him. He's a great guy. He's a great player, but we've got to fix it. You hear that, Texans coach, after the game, Joe?
I don't think so.
Right, because that was Bill O'Brien. That was Bill O'Brien. I mean, come on. That was 2019. That was 5 years ago. 5 years ago. We're saying this about him 5 years ago. He has never fixed this. He has never worked on it. He has never addressed it. It's kind of funny, except for when you remember that you're paying this guy a ton of money, and he's not showing up for the offseason. And then after the game, did you hear what he said? This makes it even worse. This is why I'm really frustrated with Tunsil in particular. I can have a bad game from a guy like that. But then after the game, Tunsil's being asked about the penalties, and he's playing the victim card. First, he talks about the false starts. This is courtesy of Aaron Wilson of KPRC. False starts. I want people to understand we all have to be on the same communication. I'll take accountability because they're calling my name, but it takes all of us. Dude, it was 3 times by you. 3.
And this is the same quote from that Bill O'Brien one you just read. This is from 2019. I got a target on my back. Bull bleep calls. He said that in 2019. All he does is blame the refs when this happens. He takes no self-accountability.
You're right.
You've been blaming the refs for 5 years. Remember, because that's when it started was, and then it became, oh, he's just so quick off the ball. The refs are wrong.
No, he's cheating.
Like, it's no, like at some point, you are just committing false starts all the time. Maybe you should be the one, Laramie Tunsil, whether it's the illegal formation or the false starts. You need to adjust.
Junior Broncos comments, to be fair, the NFL picking random rules like illegal formations on tackles to enforce each year is whack. Nope, Laramie Tunsil should be called for it because he does it all the time. That's been his whole career, is doing this. He says after the game, too, again, more Tunsil, kind of deflecting. And Juice Scruggs did it. Tytus Howard did it, too, with the illegal formation thing. They tried to make an example out of us. The first 2 weeks, we lined up the same with no problem. Now it's a problem. I feel like somebody told them to make an example out of us. Got to call it the same both sides. Tunsil's always leaning up a little bit back, lining up a little bit back, and he's always jumping right away. Like, the guy gets a head start. He's cheating. I can understand why they would make an example of him. Because you should make an example of somebody who is abusing the rules. That's what he has been doing for 5 years. No attempt to address it. And then on top of that, you hear this afterwards. And all I can say is, as I said before, FFS for bleep's sake, buddy boy.
I do agree with Junior Broncos a little bit that the NFL is picking and choosing when they're calling this. Yes.
Well, I mean, he got a sting operation and so much ammunition to do this on him.
But, like with the illegal formation, I know they're not setting it up. It's not being clear. They showed this the first game of the season. They kept calling it on the Chiefs, and they were only calling it on the Chiefs. And Andy Reid and them, they were livid in that game because they were not calling it on Detroit. And then it goes away, and then it happens to the Texans. But at some point, your players and your coaches have to adjust. If it's going to keep getting called, and I know Tytus Howard said they're calling on us and they're not calling us, we're lining up in the same spot. But at some point, like, you have to adjust. The NFL, when they put in new rules, it never goes easy. We saw this when they started to call more offensive pass interference, and we're seeing it now with this illegal formation. It doesn't make sense, but you have to adjust. You have to. It's your responsibility as the players and as the team to fix the problem.
I think it makes total sense. I do. You have way too many rules that help the offense out. And, oh, they can do false start? No problem? Like, screw offensive players. As somebody who believes defenders' lives matter, I feel that we should be doing things to punish offensive linemen, to punish offensive players. Because they are cheating. Tunsil's cheating. He is. He can say he's not, but he's been doing this his whole career. And, hey, he might be one of the best tackles in the game. But the guy is trying to always get a jump on everybody. And he gets exposed when he's playing in hostile environments as loud as U.S. Bank Stadium was for the Vikings. We got a call, 713-780-3776. It's Derek. Derek, what's up?
Hey, guys, I would like for us to pump the brakes a little bit and they're emotional or whatever. As far as with the Texans, as I can recall, I think the last 20 years or so, they haven't had an undefeated team to go to the Super Bowl, and I know most teams each year that represent the Super Bowl or even the winner, they have had an ugly or tough loss during the season. I don't think we can jump overboard and say that the Texans won't get there. I just think we move on from there. And the fact that your response is going to show, after my comment, is going to show a little emotion, says it all. I'm basically saying that even when the Cowboys went 1-18 1 year, they beat the Redskins, who won the Super Bowl. So each year, the teams that represent the Super Bowl have an ugly or tough or loss that's unexpected. It's just three games in. Just breathe a little, relax, and just think kumbaya.
Look, respectfully disagree, Derek, because take a look at the Chiefs when they've won the Super Bowl the last couple of years. Now, have they had a bad loss? They had a bad loss to the Broncos last season, but it wasn't like that. It's 24-9, 34-7. There's a difference there. Just take a look at the Chiefs the last 3 years. And that is the standard you are trying to hold yourself up to the level of. Does it mean the season's over? No. A lot of things can be corrected by the end of the year, to Derek's point. But what I'm trying to say here is, like, we got a high expectation here. You went in there and you pooped your pants first play of the game. My bad. Second play of the game. You know?
When's the last time? I'll say this research for someone that wants to do it. At Jeremy Branham. He's been doing some good stuff today already on social media. When's the last time a Super Bowl contender went six quarters scoring 10 points? That's what they did. They scored 3 points in the second half against the Bears on Sunday Night Football, and they scored 7 points this weekend. 10 points in six quarters? Like, come on. It's not. It's just not. That's not something you see. It's below expectation. The bar is raised. This is not kumbaya. They've never gone to an AFC Championship game. They've never gone to a Super Bowl. The expectation is that they're going to finally be on the cusp of doing that. So we're going to hold them to a higher expectation. And getting dominated by the Minnesota Vikings with Sam Darnold at quarterback, who maybe they are really good. And we'll look back at this loss differently at the end of the season. Maybe we will. Right now, I'm not. Like, 10 points in six quarters for a guy that we're claiming as a top five quarterback in the NFL and an offensive coordinator who should have been a head coach, supposedly.
Oh, yeah. That.
Give me a break. Like, it's not good enough.
He's Joe. I'm Paul. We got Sean behind the glass. You want to chime in on that debacle yesterday, 713-780-3776 to call and to text. And I mean, we didn't even talk about how the defense gave up four touchdown passes to Sam Darnold and gave up 4.2 yards a carry on the ground against the Vikings running attack. Lots of stuff to dive into. Who's most to blame for yesterday? Tunsil, Bobby Slowick, somebody else. You get to answer that. Stick around. It is Golan and George. First, let me tell you about my friends at MyBookie and MyBookie.ag. There are two Monday night football games. Hopefully we can laugh at the Jaguars to, you know, forget about what happened because I was bad, you know. Made me sad. I was so sad that I went and watched Alien Romulus last night to try to distract it, and luckily I had nightmares because of the monster in Alien Romulus. But hey, mybookie.ag, promo code BET975, no nightmares there. Dreams coming true! That's because they double your initial deposit right away, and you get to play with that money. You can play a little blackjack. You can play a little poker with live dealers. Or you can bet on the football games tonight. Monday Night Football, we got two games because we will not ever let you have a day without football. And if we could, we would play it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday, and then on Monday again. There's two Monday Night Football games tonight. Are you ready? Are you ready for that? Well, mybookie.ag, you can bet on both of those Monday Night Football games. Mybookie.ag, promo code BET975. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only with mybookie.ag.
Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Third and 26. Flags. Play clock was winding
down.
False
start. Offense number 78. 5-yard penalty. It's third down.
That's number 5 on Tunsil individually. 10 overall against Houston.
And that's a legitimate Pro Bowl left tackle. This isn't just someone out there who's overmatched having a tough day. This is not something you expect from a captain of your team and one of the best left tackles in the game.
Charles Davis might be the best color commentator in the NFL, calling games on Sundays. And I like that he brought up that Laremy Tunsil is, in fact, a captain. He is a captain. 10 penalties over 3 games this year, 8 of them on third down. But he's still a captain. They're going to make him turn in his gun, his badge? I don't know about that.
Whoa, I wonder how that would go over if they tried that.
You have no options to replace him. He is that good, too. I mean, who else would you have to put in for him? He's one of the better left tackles in the NFL. At least I'm told that. But I feel like of all the players on the Houston Texans, this is a guy that just does not seem to have the same level of accountability as the average guy in the 53. And that is very frustrating when you see a performance like yesterday, which is magnified by him after the game, talking about how the referees were singling him out.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy you just gave $60 million guaranteed to. $75 million contract. It was a 3-year deal last year. And this is the second contract you've given this guy. He keeps having these problems. Like, at some point, it's got to stop. Like you have to find a way to stop doing this if you're the Texans and you're Laremy Tunsil. I mean, too, at one point, when you're down 14-0, and you've got a 3rd and 4, and you get 3 false starts to make it a 3rd and 19.
And an illegal formation.
Oh, yeah, one of them, yeah. I mean,
by the
what?
Way, C.J. Stroud threw an interception on the illegal formation. The Viking defender was not able to come down with it inbounds. Do you want to hear that? Do you want to hear a supercut of that?
Yes.
Let's go down memory lane.
3rd and 4. Stroud is battling the crowd and battling this Vikings defense. Agumbawale is in there. Movement. Stroud was clapping his hands. Flags fly.
Looked up at the top with Titus Howard.
False start. Offense, number 71. Five-yard penalty. It's third down. False start by the offensive center for abrupt head movement. It's a five-yard penalty. Ooh. It's third down.
Five penalties all against the offense. This isn't working. Tunsil on the left side.
False start. Offense number 78. It's a five-yard penalty. It's still third down.
Even Sean Hockley at the last moment of that announcer was like, yeah, again.
Illegal formation. Offense number 78. This penalty's declined. It's fourth down.
Yeah, it's been a nightmarish day so far for Laramie Tunsil.
And by the way, it was just a 14-0 game then. But as you said, they were in field goal range. Move it back 5 yards. Move it back 5 yards. Move it back 5 yards. And then Tommy Townsend's punt, touchback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing went their way. Special teams, not a good day for them. Kymie Fairbairn missed a field goal. He kicked a kickoff out of bounds. Reigning two-time special teams player of the week. He will not be getting it for a third straight week. Lots of blame to go around. So who gets the most blame? We've focused a lot on Laramie Tunsil. We'll get to Bobby Slowick. Joe, you had an interesting one that I haven't seen a lot of people talking about.
Yeah, Nick Caserio.
Nick Caserio.
At some point, you have to hold the people that puts this roster accountable. I mean, when you look at the offensive line last year, the excuse was injuries. But Laramie Tunsil is the guy you paid. Kenyon Green's the guy you drafted in the first round. You drafted Juice Scruggs. Shaq Mason, for the second straight year, has been the best offensive lineman, it seems, at least the least penalized. And then Titus Howard has not been great. I mean, that's the guy is protecting C.J. Stroud. And that's what. And you said this offseason, we're good with Kenyon Green, Juice Scruggs, and they're not the only ones to blame. Like, there's blame to go around on the pressure for all these guys. I know Titus Howard tried to use the excuse that when he had to move up to be in line with the center, you know, and he couldn't see the ball moving, he was just getting his ass kicked. It's not, you know, Nick Caserio's fault that Bobby Slowick thinks that blocking Jonathan Grenard with Cade Stover is a great idea. What an idiot. Like, I saw that too much this weekend. Why are we blocking using tight ends to block pass rushers in the NFL? What are we doing?
Especially guys who just played for your team last year who probably would be very pissed off if you were to send a rookie tight end to block them.
But, like, Nick Caserio, he is the one who assembled this offensive line.
Mm.
And you have to put some blame at the guy who's in charge. Like, he's done a great job with all these draft picks and all these different things he's done. I'm not denying that. I'm not, like, saying I think he's a really good GM. But his investments in the offensive line hasn't panned out. George Fant was better than Titus Howard last year, and you got him for scraps before the season started.
George Fant, I played him in NBA 2K once.
Oh, how'd that go?
He beat me. Ugh. I'm not good.
Was it
at NBA
close
2K.
At least? Was it closer than the Vikings Texans game?
It was closer.
That's good.
But I mean, the game was 5 minutes. So.
Oh, okay.
You want to really get depressed just hearing about the investments Nick Caserio has made in the offensive line? And look, none of these guys are going to see the entirety of the contract that they're getting paid. But if you add up the total salaries for all five of the Texans starting offensive linemen, you know how much money that is?
I saw you tweet.
$188 million for those five. C.J. Stroud has been sacked 11 times in 3 games. He is on pace to get sacked 62 times. That is David Carr-esque. And I know we said this after the first 2 games last year, but I feel like Stroud has done a really good job of evading more sacks. There were a couple of other plays in this game where he had to evade the rush and step up and scramble. Did he get first downs? No, but he was running for his life a lot of the game. You got to give Brian Flores and the Vikings defense a lot of credit. But the offensive line for the Texans was by far the weakest unit. They couldn't protect Stroud, and they were getting penalized over and over and over again. And instead of pointing the finger at themselves after the game, they were more so pointing the finger at the referees. And Laramie Tunsil was pointing the finger at anybody but himself.
I think that's what annoys me the most. Because, like, you give some credit to the Minnesota Vikings. Someone tweeted this out today, the Ari Mirov guy. The Vikings have 5 sacks in week 1, 6 in week 2, 5 in week 3. They're the third team since 1990 with at least 5 sacks in each of their first 3 games. That's an impressive defense you're playing. It is. But it's the excuse making, it's the penalties, and it's the sacks that it's too much for your offense to succeed. You're not going to have success when you're moving backwards constantly. We saw it in week one. They had 3rd and 2. They got a false start, and then CJ got sacked on the next play. Mm-hmm. Like, the offensive line is just not good enough right now to be a real contender this season. They're just not.
The funny thing is, we thought last year with all the injuries that this year would be a lot better. I mean, is it worse?
It seems worse. It feels worse, right?
I mean, they're 100% healthy right now. This is a position that is notorious for taking its toll on the human body. There are going to be players who miss games. Mm-hmm. You are at 100% strength right now. Is it on the linemen? Is it on Bobby Slowick? And again, we haven't even gotten to the defense yet. It is Kalon and George. He is Joe. I am Paul. You want to weigh in on this? 713-780-3776. To call in, to text it, you can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. We could talk about the Astros. We could. I mean, but there was also a lot of bad over the weekend for them, too. I know they took 3 of 4, and the magic number is technically 1. They just have to win tonight. The AL West is over. But that's on the table as well. Stick around.
I mean, look, if you're feeling, you know, if you're looking at the Texans' offensive line and you're saying it's not very good, well, next time you go to LaBerge, Lake Charles, just look at some player prop bets maybe on some over-under sack totals. Maybe if you're there this weekend, Jonathan Hines-Allen or Allen Hines, whatever his name is, maybe look at him dominating the Houston Texans' offensive line. We were there this weekend yesterday. Sean, Brian, myself, we did a show. It was a cool environment to be there. First time I was there for NFL action, it was awesome. The 24-foot video wall, all the games that were on. It was very funny when they were telling us the one game, Browns-Giants, that wasn't going to make the big TV. But the food was great. The environment was absolutely incredible. I can't recommend it enough. It is the new ESPN Bet Sportsbook there at LaBerge Lake Charles. And when you want to leave Texas and bet on your Texas teams, always make sure you do it at LaBerge in Lake Charles.
You are back with Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
Darnold. Out of the pocket. Darnold will throw. Touchdown! Justin Jefferson open. And the Vikings cash in.
So the Texans lost 34-7 to the Vikings on Sunday. They're 2-1 on the year. If you don't remember the first of 4 Sam Darnold touchdown passes yesterday, on that play, can you guess who was covering Justin Jefferson? And by cover, I mean he wasn't really covering him because he fell. Also, he's one of the last people you'd expect to be covering, you know, the best wide receiver in the NFL.
I don't know why. What's his name?
That's all you need to know.
Aaron Murray's the Georgia quarterback, right? Eric Murray, the Texans safety. Why?
It was Eric Murray in coverage against Justin Jefferson, who in the first half, okay, I get it. He's really good. But what, you're just going to say, we'll just let Justin Jefferson get his? He could not have been more open in the first half. I think he had all 8 of his catches for 81 yards in the first half, plus that touchdown. And, I mean, it starts there. The Texans' defense, just as bad as the Texans' offense yesterday. We focus more on the Texans' offense because there are more expectations attached to it. But unless your name is Tim Settle, their defensive tackle, I mean, top to bottom, Texans couldn't stop the run. Texans couldn't stop Sam Darnold. It was a rough day.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they showed it later in the game. Sam Darnold, they had to cover Justin Jefferson for over 6 seconds on that touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to do? That's hard for anybody.
It's hard for anyone.
Poor Eric Murray.
Yeah, but like,
who fell again while he was trying to do
that. Yeah, it was not the most athletic play we've seen from a Texans defender this year. But
that was like basically what I would have expected Granato in the midst of the listener party on Friday. What a great time. Like, if Granato was out there, would Granato have done better than Eric Murray? Probably not, but Would he have done close?
No, I mean.
Possibly.
Justin Jefferson could have just, like, pushed him and Granato might have fallen over. But Murray just said, you know, prayer. I mean, you're asking any cornerback in the NFL. You know, it could be, you know, from Stingley to Sauce Gardner. Hell, you could go back in time and, you know, put Revis Island out there for 6 seconds against Justin Jefferson. It's not going to go very well. But, yeah, I mean, Jefferson was – he was very, very good in this game. I mean, he is arguably – I think he's the best offensive player in the NFL that's not a quarterback. Like, I think he's better than Tyreek Hill. I think he's just absolutely incredible. But he's going to get his. But even then, like, there's some advanced stuff that's coming out today that you're looking at the Texans' success rate, you know, when they're in off coverage versus, you know, pressing him at the line. When they're pressing him at the line, Justin Jefferson had a terrible day. When you're giving him 5 yards of cushion, that's where he had all of his success.
And there are a couple of moments, and I know a lot of people are focusing on these moments where Derek Stingley seemingly was lined up against him and giving him a lot of cushion. And they were wondering, oh, does Derek Stingley have that dog in him? We don't know what the coverage calls were in those situations, but Stingley has not been the difference maker that we thought he was turning into after the way he finished last year with 5 interceptions after he came back from the hamstring injury. We have a text. Is it maybe time to pump the brakes on Stingley and the secondary? The secondary as a whole, we had big questions about. And it's not just that moment with Eric Murray in coverage against Justin Jefferson. There's another moment where Sam Darnold finds Jimmy Ward covering, what's this guy's name, Naylor? Again, Jordan Addison, their second best receiver, is not out there. TJ Hawkins is not out there. And Jimmy Ward, he's at least in position against this guy, but here's what happens.
Shotgun. Darnold looks. Throws it. Caught. Naylor. Touchdown.
I mean, you got to do something there. You got to put your hand out. He was in position. But with a lot of the Texans' defensive backs, and Jimmy Ward a couple of plays before getting called for pass interference, if you're in the right place, you got to do something. But if you're in the right place and you can't even do something then, what's going to happen the rest of the game? Darnold is a guy who is going to give you opportunities. There was that one play, I think it was on the right sideline, where Sam Darnold just chucks it up downfield to, I think, Justin Jefferson. And both Kalen Bullock and, I want to say, Kamari Lassiter collided.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that should have been an interception right there. You had opportunities in this game to take the football away, because Darnold will give you a couple of Jameis-y moments. He's white man Jameis. Okay, he does some dumb stuff with the football.
Yeah,
but he's got talent, and in this game, they didn't take advantage of the opportunities that Darnold presented them with, and it does make you wonder just about that side of things. They were so good at taking the football away last year, and in a game like yesterday, where they needed to make something happen, nothing.
And you have to go back to week one with the Anthony Richardson plays. Like, there are very few quarterbacks who are going to throw it that far down the field. Anthony Richardson has completed 50% or less of his passes in the two games since. And yes, he completed only 9 of 19 in that game as well against the Texans, but he still cooked you for two long plays in that game. And then Sam Darnold was having his way with you. I mean, this is, you know, you look ahead a little bit already to Sunday, and you say, okay, Trevor Lawrence, like, we haven't seen him play this week. Maybe there's a bounce back game, but the Jacksonville Jaguars offense has been pretty poor so far. Like, this is another performance where they should dominate this weekend. But I feel like you kind of have to throw out week two against Caleb Williams and say, okay, what happened in these other two games? Darnold had his way with you, and Richardson, when he found success limited, it was big-time success.
Yeah.
Secondary flaws are very clearly there. And there was moments in this game where they're in man coverage. There was one, and Jimmy Ward ended up moving off of him as Jefferson moved in motion. But Jimmy Ward was following Justin Jefferson across the field in motion. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's a bad idea. Like, why in any world is Eric Murray or Jimmy Ward the guy that's anywhere near Justin Jefferson when you have Lassiter and Stingley on this team?
Through three games, you have a good pass rush. You got 4 sacks yesterday. Tim Settle, shout out to you. Defensive player of the game. You have a pretty good run defense. I mean, take away that 39-yard run by Aaron Jones, and maybe we're looking at the run performance by the Vikings a little bit different. But in a game like yesterday, someone, somewhere, needed to step up. Defense didn't do it. Offense didn't do it. Special teams didn't do it. Just in totality, a bad, bad loss. And I don't know that this should have anybody saying, hey, like the season's over, they're frauds, blah, blah, blah. But I will say they don't look like Super Bowl contenders right now. A lot of season left, a lot of time to clean things up. They did have a good attitude about things, as all things considered, after the game. And you like to hear them say, yeah, this is going to be a learning experience for us, blah, blah, blah. But I'm kind of stunned that a team with D'Amico Ryans as head coach and C.J. Stroud as quarterback can get pantsed like that by a team quarterbacked by Sam Darnold. Like, you can talk about how well Kevin O'Connell's coaching that team. You can talk about Brian Flores and what a good defensive play caller he is. Ultimately, that is a team that you have as much talent as, if not more than, and you lost to a team with the defense featuring four players that you had last year. Jonathan Grenard, who had three sacks, Camus Grugier-Hill, who had an interception and almost had a forced fumble and recovery. Honestly, I'm not sure that wasn't a fumble on Dalton Schultz. That was a borderline one. And Shaq Griffin's playing for that team. Blake Cashman's playing for that team. I mean, add insult to injury. And they took it personally, and it does kind of feel like they waltzed into U.S. Bank Stadium, clearly not fearing the Herndon Horn or whatever the hell that's called. You know, what is it? The darn, you know?
I like that. I think that sounds good.
Heedle, hoodle, heedle, hoodle. Sorry, I'm being offensive to our Swedish, Scandinavian audience, but
it's okay.
It's fine. You're tall.
I feel like you got a little Swede in you.
I wish.
Oh, okay.
No.
That was
no.
This weekend, am I right?
Yeah.
Got him.
Got me. That hurt my feelings.
Sorry, Paul.
It was a bad game. It was just bad football for the Houston Texans. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to rack my brain for, like, what's a positive. I guess CJ didn't get hurt. Well, maybe he did.
Well, he was limping.
Like, hopefully it's not severe. We'll see what the but they, you know.
Stephon Diggs.
Absolutely.
Here's the positive. Stephon Diggs in a game where the Texans were getting their ass kicked and a return to the place that he used to play. One, the man produced. I think he had 10 catches for 90 yards. And when things were hitting the fan, who was the one that was trying to rally everybody with positive words of affirmation to get back on track? It was Stephon Diggs. It wasn't C.J. Stroud. It was Stephon Diggs.
We don't know how positive those words are.
It looked positive.
He said it was positive after the game.
Okay.
I believe him.
At a certain point when you're down 24-7, like, I don't know if the time is for positivity. Maybe some negative words should get mixed in there. but yes, he was displaying leadership, more leadership than we saw from the quarterback, and definitely more than what we've heard from their left tackle.
I hope that Stephon Diggs was talking to all of them like somebody in a musical set in the 1950s. Come on, gang. We're better than this.
I don't think he said gang. Oh, no. Maybe he said gang.
Hey, fellas. Other stuff. Come on. Yeah. We've got this. And then he breaks into song and starts dancing around and everyone else joins in. And ultimately, then the comeback starts. That didn't happen.
No.
That didn't happen.
It's cold in Minnesota. And then he just goes into song.
I would love that. Oh, God. All right, well, so you want to talk about the Texans? We got 2 more hours. I think we need a break.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk also about the Astros, who the magic number is 2, which is technically 1 tonight because they're playing the Mariners to win the American League West. But 2 things of note from this weekend series. 1, what is up with Yordan Alvarez? And 2, was that it for Justin Verlander? At least in Houston. Gallant and George, he's Joe on Paul. Stay put.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Down and in, that'll be ball 4 and tie the game up at 6. Taylor Ward drives in a run with a bases loaded walk. Now Zach Neto the batter. He's got 2 home runs the last 3 at bats, and he doubles down the line and left, and that's going to score at least two runs, maybe a third. Taylor Ward being waved around by Eric Young. That's going to be a bases-clearing double by Neto, and all of a sudden the Angels lead this game 9-6 with a four-run ninth.
I mean, it's only his second blown save of the year, so you can't be too mad about Josh Hader yesterday. But I think more concerning is, Joe, whatever happened to Yordan Alvarez, who in the third inning, while legging out a double, slides into second base, and I have no idea what happened, other than Yordan, whenever he runs, you never know what's going to happen. It's like it's a ticking time bomb.
And that blew up at the worst possible time?
Yeah. After the game, Joe Espada was asked what happened to Yordan. Here's what he had to say.
Pretty sore right knee contusion, and we are getting some imaging done right now, so we won't find out anything, you know, at least for next hour. But, you know, not what I wanted to see. You know, when I run out there, and it's pretty sore. Just when he slid and just his weight on the knee, just the way it landed. So hopefully we get some good news here.
In the Astros update mid-game yesterday afternoon, it was officially called a right knee contusion.
Oh, so it's going to need to get amputated.
I hope not. Like, I hope not. I mean, the other updates that we saw this weekend from the Astros medical staff were Taylor Scott, he's on the injured list with a thoracic spine strain.
Mm-hmm. That sounds bad, too.
Yeah, that's
to be honest.
That sounds really bad. And then Ben Gamble most likely is out for the postseason with a fibula fracture. So you never know. But it does sound rather promising with Yordan based off of what some of the Astros flagship were saying earlier today.
Yeah, Steve Sparks was on the Astros flagship, obviously the color commentator for the radio team, and he said the Astros said they dodged a bullet with Yordan's knee injury. He said, quote, "I'm hearing that they dodged a bullet. They'll know more with how sore he is when he gets to the ballpark today." I know Sparky a little bit, like working with him for 3 years. I also don't think someone that is an employee of the Houston Astros would say that without being pretty confident. Because I feel like that's a pretty big, like, you're going to be in trouble if you say that publicly, and it's going to go pretty, like, locally viral. And then if you're wrong, you're going to get a big-time slap on the wrist. So that does make me feel better. But like he said, you got to kind of wait to see how sore he is today. Because Joe Espada essentially said Yordan's fat and landed on his knee. Too much muscle and landed on his knee.
Yeah, too muscular.
Too muscular.
It's like Bo Jackson. His own strength is what hurt him.
I think that's what they used to say in the 1920s. You could be too ripped. You could be too jacked. Mm. He's muscle-bound, see? There's no way he'll be able to run around first base to second with all those muscles in his legs.
That's why you have to be built like the leader of the free world, Howard Taft. Or what? William Howard Taft.
William Howard Taft, President Taft, yeah. Large man he was.
Leader Portly. Of the free world.
You know what? He
broke a bathtub or something.
He ate so that America today could really eat.
He was a trailblazer?
He was a trailblazer. Toilet blazer, trailblazer. What's the difference? Sorry, that's our president we're talking about. Yeah. Once a president, always a president.
True.
Old Taffy.
Number like 31 or whatever he was. I will say, Sparks could have the good information or the information that the Astros have up to date. I don't trust the information's any good, though. I don't know if the doctors know if he should be all right. Like that's where the lack of trust comes from, because what we talked about all summer with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, it's just like how do they?
They thought he was going to be fine.
Yeah, they said 2 days.
Yeah, so
and it turned into 3 months.
It's when Yordan is in the lineup next. That's when I will assume that he's okay.
Well, you know what? Right side. I mean, no way. It's a 3 month injury. Because there's not 3 months left in the season.
So it could be a six-month injury?
No.
It could be a four-week injury.
The longest that injury could be is 4 to 5 weeks.
See, here's the problem with that, Paul, okay?
You can't miss game 9 of the World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah, except you can miss game 1 of 2025. Like, that's like Lance McCullers. He'll be fine. He's pitching 2 years.
Why don't you trust your beloved Astros, Joe?
When they fire those bum-ass doctors.
Whoa.
That's when I'll trust
them.
Are you a doctor?
No.
I'm from the house of a learned doctor, so basically I am.
That's true.
You grew up with a doctor.
Yes.
I grew up with a doctor.
She wasn't a doctor when you grew up. But
no. I haven't lived with her in since I was like 13, but hey.
But you know, you have connections to a doctor. You can, you know, text it.
I can pretend that I know things that doctors
You just pass along what the Astros have said about injuries and she goes, "Oh my God, that's so stupid."
She did do that once. That's like the most medical she's ever given me, like the longest conversation we ever had. I said, "So Kyle Tucker's dealing with the shin contusion that's kept him out 2 months." And she was like, "That's dumb. No, he's not." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." More on the Astros. We saw Justin Verlander on, was it Friday, Saturday? It was rough, whatever the case. Justin Verlander was asked about the standing ovation he got on the way out and definitely felt quite reflective and just very self-aware that this might be the last time he pitched at Minute Maid Park.
Honestly, pretty special to me. I know how these fans know the game. They pay attention. They know I'm out there grinding and, you know, trying to give everything I can. You know, I've worked as hard as humanly possible. You know, trying to bounce back as quick as I can from the injury and get back out there. And, you know, for them to have that ovation after such a difficult day. Yeah, it touched me.
Think that's it?
It's over. 4 2/3 on Friday night. It's while we're at, you know, the listener party's going on. People are excited when the offense is doing well. JV gives us 6 earned runs. It's done. He's not on the postseason roster. Like, he can be there.
Not even on the postseason roster.
No.
Do you think they'll have the balls to do that? I don't think they do.
I guess because of, like, the Taylor Scott injury, like maybe the trickle-down effect is that he is what Jose Urquidy was, you know, in 2022, where he only pitched in a blowout World Series game. But, like, you really think Justin Verlander is going to do that? Like, that's saved for, like, the scrubs on the team that are on the roster just so you have enough bodies. Like, I just cannot imagine a world in which, you know, you're beating the Detroit Tigers by 9 in the first round of the playoffs, and Justin Verlander is walking out there to pitch the final 3 innings. It doesn't matter if he gets, you know, shelled. So I guess you could just waste a postseason playoff roster spot.
I bet they feel a little more confident doing it, given how reflective he sounded after that outing, where he's saying, yeah, I understand I might not be on the postseason roster as well, but it's another thing to actually pull the trigger, you know?
I mean,
they're going to be looking at him like that poor little kid with his shotgun was at Old Yeller while he was snarling like a rabid dog because he had the rabies.
I mean, Justin has to be looking at his career, not just this postseason. Like, the chasing 300 wins, he's like, what, like 80-something away?
No, I think it's like 40.
I think it's 40. Yeah.
Yeah. Might as well be 80. But
the idea that he's going to get a significant contract from a team next year, he has to be having realization that that's not going to be happening. I mean, what's best case scenario for Justin Verlander? Go home and pitch for the Detroit Tigers next year or pitch for the Astros?
Chicago White Sox?
And get the David Ortiz treatment where it's like every time you go to a ballpark, like they give you a cool prize?
That would be fun.
Like you just give him a retirement tour? Like that is that best case? Like it's just been so bad.
What if he signs with another team and they trade for him again? What if he's like really good?
The Astros trade for him again?
Yeah, well, just Duke Crane just can't quit him. They're like that couple that can't stop getting back together.
It would be so.
I would laugh very hard if the Astros traded more prospects for Verlander. Say he has a really good first half on a bad team next year.
I think it's Matthew McConaughey's parents have been married and divorced 3 times,
or
they've been married 3 times and divorced twice. But yeah, that. Where we keep having to talk about the Justin Verlander trade and go, no, wait, the third one. No, wait, the second one.
I don't think I can do that again. At that point, it starts to become math that I can't.
They didn't give up anything for Justin Verlander in the third time that they traded for him.
It would be wild if, like, all of a sudden next year at the deadline, you're like, the Houston Astros since 2017 have traded, like, 12 prospects for Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
For a combined, like, three war. Like, all these guys, I mean, none of the guys from the Tigers trade are really any good. We'll see about the Mets one, but I can't wait for the next Justin Verlander trade.
When you're in the Letterman Jacket Skull and Bone Society, you're always in the Letterman Jacket Skull and Bone Society. If you play golf with Jim Crane a lot, and Reggie Jackson, and Jeff Bagwell, and Craig Biggio, and you're getting sunburnt out there, because Jeff Bagwell really gets sunburnt out there.
That's true.
You know what happens? Like, you're just a member for life. But if that was it for him at Minute Maid Park, I'm glad that he at least got an ovation on his way out. It does suck to see it all kind of fall apart like this.
Yeah, because he did so much for this team. I mean, it's out on paper right now. It's the best trade in Houston sports history.
He made them real. Like, yeah. They weren't a real threat in 2017 until they got him. And he was awesome in that ALCS against the Yankees. And while the postseason performances were never great after that, it was a hell of a run. I'm glad he at least got that. I hope his last start potentially with the Astros goes a little bit better. Anyway, it's Gallant and George. He is Joe. I am Paul. Sean behind the glass, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Was this a one-time thing for the Houston Texans? You answer that next. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.